Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
Delighted to say Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent joins me in studio. Evening, Rory.
Hi, Richie.
And also Liam Toland is on the line as well. Evening, Liam.
How are you, Richie?
Not too bad. Reading the piece earlier on with Keith Earls, he sat down with a group of journalists yesterday. He was talking about the win in Paris. He described it, Liam, as his proudest moment, his biggest moment in an Ireland jersey. A lot of that squad have taken great, great heart from the... It's a historic win because they don't come too often. Was it just two wins before last week before, since 1972? So they are really taking this on board for what it was.
Yeah, and I think so. And to be fair to a lot of the people in the squad, that they haven't won a whole lot themselves. So they've probably been very envious of the great Munster team and great Leinster team in the noughties. And they want to set their own piece of history. And definitely Paris was that. On top of that, of course, the 41 phases that Ireland went through before the amazing drop goal, if you benchmark that with what Wales went through against Scotland, and in their way, they had a superb performance as well. But for me, I think the memory that Paris will give those players will stand Irish rugby for another couple of years, leading all the way to the Rugby World Cup. So I think it was a monumental moment in time for Ireland, but for those players in particular, because the memory bank, muscle has a memory, and that will stick in their heads. And you think of the great losses we've had, you know, going back to Australia in the World Cup in 91, all the way through France in 2007, and then New Zealand, of course, in 2013. So I think for Keith Earls and a lot of these new guys coming in, they're probably not jealous, but certainly envious of the players ahead of them, and they want their piece of history, and Paris was part of that.
Yeah, Keith Earls has seen some things by the age of 30 at this stage. For him to come out with that now this week and say it's his proudest moment as a player, as a professional, is quite something, and it shows you a nature of what the win means, not just in the context of the morale of the squad, but just in terms of progressing through this championship, to set them on that footing, to come from where they did within that match, the depths of conceding that Teddy Thomas try, to working their way back through those 41 phases, to eking their way over the halfway line, to get themselves within 40-odd yards of the goal for Sexton to make that kick. I mean, that was a huge, huge team effort.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember sitting in Steve Hansen's press conference after he delivered the 2015 World Cup, and he went back to 2013 and talked specifically about that game as their step on the way, as a game that they always went back to whenever they were in trouble, and they did it a couple of times against Australia as well. And in the short term, you know, Ireland have difficult games coming up. Maybe this week is the one they'll expect to win, but they'll be in tough moments again. And they'll, you know, for the duration of Joe Schmidt's time in charge, I think they'll keep going back to that well. The fact that when they were down in Paris and they had a 22 dropout with very little time on the clock, they were able to keep the ball in bad conditions for that long. They were able to push the envelope and trust themselves to produce a cross kick of such accuracy to every little bit of the stuff that they work on in training ground to pull it off without making a mistake. I mean, it's such difficult thing to do for so long. I mean, each of those skills are things that are second nature to them, but to put it all together, you know, they'll rarely go through 41 phases in a season, never mind in a game. So yeah, I think it's an important step. It rescued their campaign, it rescued their season. We'd be having a very different conversation now had they had someone slipped or someone knocked it on, or had Nigel Owens penalised them for an accidental offside, which he could have done once or twice. He swallowed the whistle a little bit, but it's very valuable. It's the kind of thing teams build on. It's kind of like, it's like Dublin through the league last year, winning all those last minute games and then producing it, you know, in the last couple of minutes of the All-Ireland final. Kilkenny, the All Blacks, it's things great teams do on their way to consistently achieving.
Liam, it's something that Schmidt seems to do a lot of. Well, I say a lot. He takes these key losses that Ireland have suffered. You think to Argentina in the World Cup, was it 3 years ago? You think of that narrow loss to New Zealand. He would claim afterwards that each of those performances were, you know, in and of themselves. But he's used the lessons from those performances to build on something going forward. You get the sense that French performance and everything that went before that, because let's be honest, it wasn't a great 80 minutes before that for Ireland, that he will use every single lesson that was eked out of that week, that game, to put into the preparation for this week.
Yeah, and if you look at, as I was all last week, the Six Nations statistical report for 2017, wonderful reading.
That sounds like a riveting read, Liam.
It's sitting beside my thesis. But you can actually see the transition. Like, for example, Eddie Jones is saying Ireland is a kick and clap team. But the reality is the English scrum half, the English out half, and the English first centre and the English full back outkick Ireland all of last Six Nations. So Ireland has transition. It's got a name for the box kick, but the English scrum half is outkicking Conor Murray throughout the Six Nations of last season. So you can see a subtle change in how Ireland are playing, and you can see it in a couple of ways. The first is how they use stolen line-up ball. They get it very, very wide. And there's a couple of things around that, but you've got a midfield now with Bundy Aki, and you've obviously got Robbie Henshaw, but in particular Rob Kearney at fullback. Those three guys are ruthlessly brilliant at the breakdown. They're as good as any back row forward. In fact, when they push the ball wide, the open side and maybe the number eight, CJ Standard, doesn't have to panic to win that breakdown. So they can take those risks, and they are taking those risks. They have a name for box kicking, but there's certainly an evolution. And I think with Saturday in mind, and I think we'll probably talk about it in more depth, there is another opportunity to push that a bit further within parameters. What was really, really interesting for me in Paris was Ireland's opening intent was just phenomenal and the conditions weren't fantastic. To see the left winger pop up on the right wing and his first pass to the right winger was wonderful to see. But pretty quickly, Ireland went back into the trenches. And I'm not sure, was it because France sucked them in or they voluntarily went in there? But they have that ability now to switch styles, which is fantastic. And they have the ability to choose, certainly, I assume this weekend, team selection, obviously, all that. They have the choice around the style. And all the memories of those losses against Argentina that you talk about are obviously fueling that towards getting back into that position again, the next quarter final, the World Cup. But there's definitely, like, we've all probably wanted a more of a transition. Like you look at New Zealand, they're scoring six tries a game. If you take Italy out of the Six Nations, the home nations are scoring 1.25 tries. So it's a very different competition. And within that parameter, I think Ireland are still prepared to push the boundary, which is wonderful to see. And I hope we'll see a bit more of it again at the weekend.
There was a sense of Joe Schmidt's face, Rory, after the game. I was watching his interview on TV3. I don't know if it bore itself out in the press conference as well. It was a mix of relief, I suppose, punched through with there was disappointment to a degree that he'd been sucked in by this, or that his side had been sucked in by this French side to play the game they ended up playing.
I'd say there was a bit of annoyance as well. I think Nigel Owens would have come in for quite a lot of criticism had Ireland not managed to pull it out of the fire. Every time you look at it again, his performance gets a bit more questionable. There's a couple of big moments just after half time when Ireland are looking for scoreboard separation. They kind of had a three-man overlap that they botched themselves with Peter Omani, and then there was a big turnover just on the French 5 metre line by Jefferson Poirot, where he never showed any sign of releasing. We had the Rob Kearney being blocked, so you know Schmidt relies on, you know, when you have pressure that you're able to you take your chances and you build that scoreline. And whatever about their own inability to take their own chances, when the referee fails to intervene in their direction, it should have been a penalty to them. You know, I think they would have gone 13 points up at that stage, and suddenly it's a very different game, and it gets away from France and they're forced to chase a bit. But yeah, I think, you know, he knew what the consequences were of defeat. He knew what we'd be talking about now, what all the coverage would have been, because Ireland were fully expected to go to the home of the ninth ranked team in the world and win. And I think that's only right because of the form that we've seen. So he was relieved. I'd say he was proud. I'd say he was a bit annoyed with the refereeing and also at his own team's inaccuracy and their inability to clear the ruck and deal with the fact that Nigel Owens wasn't punishing France for lying all over the ball. You know, if the ref isn't dealing with it, you have to do it yourself. It's a bit more difficult now that you can't use your boot, but it's still there. It's a problem that you need to solve, and Joe would expect his players to be able to solve it a bit better than they did.
Yeah,
I think it's an interesting point that Rory raises, because If and I know some of the players afterwards were saying they were frustrated by the interpretation, the breakdown, and Rory's spot on, because there was a lot of interference, subtle interference, if you like. But for me, there's only a couple of things you can do. As Rory said, good old days where you might introduce the front five in their boots. Another slight different way might be to shift the ball a bit further away. It looks like to me, and I think the example where CJ Standard got ripped by the French number eight and it spilled and it resulted in 3 points for France. I think we should expect opposition teams to have plans around how to really mess up those one-out carries. So I don't know, Rory, do you think the conditions led to it? But if the conditions were better, do you think that Ireland might have push the point of contact away from where France were at their strongest.
I thought France, just watching it back today, I thought France's line speed was really, really good. And that narrowed Ireland's options. I think they obviously, in wet conditions, you can get off the line much quicker. And you know, because you're trusting that the team against you is probably not going to push the envelope when it comes to passing. But yeah, they tightened up. I think they're even just the carrier was standing much tighter to the ruck than we'd expect from Ireland. So I think Liam makes a good point. And I think Ireland do need to introduce more subtlety to their play in the next couple of weeks if they're to have the kind of success that people are expecting them to have. I think, yeah, they need to, you know, France were able to predict what they were going to do much better, and that's going to be an issue for them in the next couple of games.
The strange thing is about this week, Liam, is that it's a 6-day turnaround for Italy. Again, we mentioned the amount of tries that you're able to run in notionally against the Italians during a Six Nations campaign. You kind of prepare differently, but you also don't want to prepare too differently for this game.
Well, I think that the first thing you got to do is look at the team sheet, because Ireland need to look at the hurdles coming down the track. And there's a few reasons why you change the side. One of them is to allow competition within the squad and give people a real reward. The other is to allow people to freshen up. So you could argue Joey Carberry starting at 10. I personally would leave the same second rows. I'd start Cronin at hooker. Dan Levy's going to start at 7 now. Jack Conan could start at 8. So with maybe 4 or 5 changes, you're giving the guys of CJ Stander and Sexton a break that they well deserve. But you also have to keep an eye on the type of tactics if you have a Larmer coming on, because Italy score most of their tries, which isn't that many, in the first half, and they concede 50% of the entire tries conceded in the Six Nations in the second half. So that's where Ireland, it's a classic example of getting your squad ready, your 23 players ready, because you're going to start scoring tries. I think England scored 4 at the weekend in the second half. Ireland should expect to do the same in some ways. But Italy are weak in other areas. Their lineout is just appalling. They just leak tries off their lineout constantly. And I think Ireland have a great opportunity there, particularly if they steal some ball from Italy, I think the way Ireland are playing. So I think our style will be slightly different, primarily because our personnel will be slightly different. And if you have someone like Larmer either starting or coming on, a player of that calibre, and you keep an eye on the Italian number 13, who I thought just hadn't a clue what he was doing at the weekend. And there are opportunities for Ireland in set phase, but also not getting sucked into the trenches. There's huge, huge opportunities. So I would expect a subtle change of style at the weekend.
I was listening to Peter O'Mahony talking yesterday, and he was saying at their set piece and at the line-out was a couple of areas where they did need to improve upon what they managed to muster in Paris. One of the players talked about coming in this week is Devon Toner into the second row for James Ryan. If, you know, all comes to pass, as Liam's laid out there with the poor line-out as it is for Italy, Toner's one of these players who can absolutely boss it and set up Ireland for, you know, decent opportunities within the, you know, the Italian 22.
Yeah, I didn't think the line-out itself was an issue, really. I think it was them all and their ability to go forward on them all. And Toner is very much a, you know, he's kind of a player who becomes the fulcrum of them all. So yeah, you can bank on him for good ball out of touch, and yeah, he's a good organizer in that department. Yeah, I think the set piece needs to be really solid in order to get the tries that Ireland need to get. I mean, they've scored 9 in the last 2 years against Italy in each of the 2 games. Weather permitting, there's no reason why they can't go and do the same, especially with the 6-day turnaround. But that all is, you know, we're not talking about necessarily flashing the ball wide every time. You know, there's nothing wrong with scoring a try off a line-out maul. And yeah, Ireland went away from that a little bit in Paris. And sometimes they've done that over the years. They've kind of gone away from it. And it's one of their fundamental strengths, and they should be proud to go to it as often as they need to. So, yeah, I think Toner will make a difference. Like Jack McGrath, again, you know, will freshen things up for Keane Healy as well. So, you know, Liam's right. It sounds like there's going to be changes, probably more in the pack than in the back line. But, yeah, Toner just gives you that solidity. Not that James Ryan did anything wrong last weekend, but I guess Toner has that size and that experience that maybe they can rally around.
Liam, in that back row, it's a terrible injury for Josh Van der Flyer out for the rest of the season, of course, with that knee ligament issue that he suffered in the first half in Paris last week. He's going to obviously need to be replaced. Dan Levy came in and did a great job off the bench last week. Do you bring in Levy and leave O'Mahony and Stander either side of him, or how do you tweak that back row?
I think this is the biggest insight into how our style can evolve, because for me, I think Dan Levy is a super player, as is Josh Van der Flyer. I think the challenge that the Irish back row has at the moment is that like, and the 41 phases tells you the value of CJ Standard and the value of Peter O'Mahony. The question is, if we go to a broader game, are you going to get the same value from those players, or do you have to dilute the, like a Jack Conan, for example, playing with Leinster, is very comfortable doing an awful lot of other things as well. So I think that it would make sense to me to pick, to rest CJ Stander, he deserves the rest, to pick Levy at seven, put Conan, in at eight, question mark over who plays at six, like Jordy Murphy, all these other guys are there as well. I don't believe in making sweeping changes for the sake of it, but one or two would certainly do. It's a really interesting one, the back row, because as the ground gets harder and depending on the ultimate ambition of the coaching structure, the back row is really inside in it. You know, to benchmark it against what England's challenge are, they just don't have a seven who can play a wider, more expansive game. So Simmons may be the guy that ends up there. So it's a really interesting one, but depending on the structure of the back row is a real insight into what the coach wants to achieve on the particular day. But with Dan Levy, I thought he was brilliant when he came on. How long did he get? He got the bones of an hour, did he?
I think it was like 4 minutes and at the end of the first half, and then it would have been the full second. So, yeah,
But see, if you look at his style, he's as abrasive and good on the ground as any of them. But the addition of his ball carrying, and particularly further out, and the lines he picks are really, really impressive. Mm. Like, I would have been calling for him to start at some stage this week, regardless of injuries.
Liam touched on Jack Conan there and what he brings to the side. What can exactly he bring to the side, and how can he dominate that Italian pack?
Jack Conan was really honest when he met a couple of us in December, after November, after he'd had his review with Joe, and he gave us most of the detail that Joe had given him, which was more than most players would give, and you know, maybe he should have kept some of it to himself, you know. But he was saying, you know, look, we've all seen what Jack Conan can do with ball in hand. He's brilliant at winning collisions, freeing his hands. Real top of the ground style, you know. He brings so much brio to that Leinster back row, and he opens up games, which is maybe a thing that Ireland couldn't do last weekend. That maybe that he can bring against Italy. What he doesn't do as well as CJ Stander and a couple of the others, according to himself, is that he can go to sleep sometimes. He can switch off during games and let them pass him by, and he is working very, very hard to arrest that, because that's the feedback he got from Joe, and that's why CJ is being picked on a more regular basis. The fact that it looks like he's going to start this weekend shows that, you know, Joe has probably, you know, has responded well to whatever he's done over the couple of weeks in between. It gives him a real opportunity to prove himself, and it also gives Ireland an opportunity to open up their game a little bit and to introduce a little bit of offloading. You know, if Jack Conan can win a few collisions and free his hands, it just allows Ireland to get in behind a bit, get a bit of front football, and cause, you know, look, I'm sure CJ will be able to do it against the Italians as well. It's Italy. But, you know, it gives Ireland an option. It gives Ireland a different way of playing, because CJ is very much a direct, hard carrier who doesn't really look to free his hands as much as Conan does. Mm-hmm. He probably does some other things better. But yeah, it, like, I think it's a really interesting selection.
Liam, looking at the backs, one of the players that's popped up a lot this week, and he was in front of the media, of course, so it's natural it would happen, is Joey Carberry, who's only had 20 minutes to his name so far this season. I mean, it's a tough ask to throw him in from the start, albeit against Italy in a Six Nations game. Do we start with Carberry? Is he better in being introduced off the bench, and whereabouts? Because we're in danger if we pursue him at out half that he suffers a bit of Ian Madigan syndrome and gets stuck in behind Johnny Sexton in the pecking order almost ad infinitum.
It's a really interesting conundrum, and obviously I'm not privy to his statistics and involved in the team training sessions, but what I would, as a word of warning, is at some point in time, Joe Smith's going to have to break the emergency glass, and the great Johnny Sexton may have to come off after 10 minutes international. That could be our last game in Twickenham. That could be with the Grand Slam riding on it. And you don't want to turn around to whomever is on the bench, be it Joey Carberry. And I think the Leinster other out half has been a little bit unfortunate, not being involved in the Irish squad. I don't know what you think, Rory. But what you definitely don't want is to turn around. Every game now is getting more and more important. And you want to give him. So I think that the ideal opportunity to get him on the pitch is obviously this weekend against Italy, assuming who the other halfback and midfield is. Assuming the midfield stays the same, well then, it would make sense to get Joey Carberry. You would have concerns as well. The level of importance Ireland have on our well over 90% kicking rate, success kicking rate, you would say, is Joey Carberry kind of battle-hardened for that role as well? So you really need, he needs to be tested and he needs to get game time. So this weekend makes most sense to me.
You're going to start him?
I don't think he will. I think there's a delicate balance there for Joe. I completely agree with Liam. But also there is the fact that the midfield and halfbacks didn't quite click at the weekend. And I think given that's probably the four that are going to start, if fit, for the remaining games, there's a need to get a bit of cohesion in there. Leinster play the Scarlets in a really big Pro 14 game next week, which it'll be, you know, lost a little bit because it's the middle of the Six Nations. It'll be very interesting to see with basically conference, whichever conference they're in, on the line next weekend. Will Leo Cullen be persuaded to give Joey Carberry a start at number 10? I think he'll get a lot of minutes at the weekend. I think he'll get about, you know, Johnny Sexton will probably be about 50, 55, and then Joey Carberry will be asked to close it out. Whether that's enough, you know, whether, you know, that risk that is being run with not playing him for so long and with only 20 minutes of fullback in Montpellier, it's definitely there, and I'm sure Joe Schmidt is aware of it, but I think he sees a bigger risk that, you know, when he goes against Wales with a kind of halfback and centre pairing that haven't quite clicked. This is an opportunity to get a bit of confidence between Sexton and Bundiaki and Robbie Henshaw acting as a second distributor, all those players working in tandem together. So I think there's a bit more upside for him there, and he's going to stick with it.
Liam, of last week's back three, the one who probably is wobbling the most in terms of whether he's selected this week or not is Jacob Stockdale. Can you see him making the cut this week, and what argument could you have for keeping him in there above Jordan Larmour?
Well, I think we could argue that he shouldn't have been picked in the first place because, like Andrew Conway, who's injured, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like, I would have thought that the back three, assuming Conway was available, would have been Conway. I think he's just playing sensational rugby, and I've been to a number of the Munster games, and he's just been on fire, and Munster been playing exceptionally well as well. So on form, I would have thought that a Conway would have been ahead of Stockdale, who was struggling in Ulster defensively in a number of times in some of the games he's played in, but also Ulster are struggling as well, and we all know that. So as a form selection, I don't think he was the one, but clearly he had a great autumn series. I just felt that, Rory, you mentioned there that Jack Conan switches off a little. I think that Stockdale learnt a massive lesson in one of the most pressurised environments of international sport in Paris. He switched off for a moment in time and got himself into a bad place. It depends how Smith looks at it. Does he say, listen, that's your lesson learned, now go back out and capitalise again? I think that'd be a clever decision. Get him right back out there and give him a chance. I think it might do him damage if you were to let him slide. So it's a coach's call, but I can see the logic of picking him, but I can see the logic of bringing in a foreign player. But the fact that Conway's injured probably gives him an extra chance then, I would imagine.
The word is Larmour's been impressing a lot of people in training this week. Again, a start is probably asking a lot of him in a Six Nations game.
Yeah, I think Liam's right. I think Stockdale was whisked off pretty much straight after the try on Saturday, and he is still a 21-year-old. He's only a year older than Armour, and he's in the infancy of what everyone will hopes is going to be.
We're all moving on so quickly. A 21-year-old is suddenly old and experienced. And,
so, Ireland need Jacob Stockdale to be he's basically Tommy Bowe's replacement. He's a prototype almost rolling off. So, I mean, to damage his confidence now when it's Italy, I think if Ireland were playing Wales this weekend, Stockdale might be in more trouble. But I think long term, over the course of the tournament, Stockdale may find himself having to bide his time a little bit. But I think that to cut him this week would have been slightly harsh, and I think from the long term investment in him to rebuild his confidence a little bit this week, Italy's probably the perfect opponent. Mm-hmm. But I think Fergus McFadden's playing really, really well as well. Also has a kick. If Carberry comes in and there is an issue over kicking, McFadden can step in. I think Larmour gets the nod this week, but I wouldn't be surprised if Fergus McFadden has a big role to play in the Six Nations.
Liam, we'd be kind of foolhardy if we didn't actually look at the Italians. They did win a couple of tries against England and Rome last Sunday, caused them trouble on occasion, particularly in the first half. Is there anywhere where Italy can really cause us bother come this Saturday?
Of course there is. I think it's ridiculous to suggest Six Nations that there isn't going to be a challenge, and even Italy who've lost so many games in the Six Nations, I think it still would be foolhardy. I think their scrum is always going to be a challenge. I think their line-out is just appalling. And that's not just, like, if you look at how they defend the line-out, it's just terrible. They're very slow over the ground. They're very slow. So if Ireland have any movement at all in the line, which they typically do with all the back row and second rows as options, that's going to be a problem. Their discipline around how to negate Ireland's play is something that's going to be very, very interesting. So I think Joe Smith's going to suck them into cul-de-sacs and make and get them into making mistakes. They do have an ambition on turnover ball to put it slightly wide. So if Ireland get a little bit narrow on defence, and they do have an error, and Ireland don't make too many errors, but if they do, to be fair to Italy, they're actually quite good at converting a turnover into an attack. And they typically get a couple of passes on the ball. They get it out wider. So if our, a little like Teddy Thomas, when he got that opportunity, Ireland had just concertinaed it a little bit. And Argentina have exposed it at times. Scotland have exposed it at times. And like I think that they, Rory was obviously, when he was reflecting on France's aggressive line speed, which is 100% right, Ireland's was also equally as impressive. And I just don't know, can Italy live with the disciplined, aggressive line speed that Ireland are going to bring to it? But I think if I was to say one place that they might get a turnover ball on Ireland's 10-metre line is somewhere where we could be under a little bit of pressure. But no team is no team can escape that either. But that's a word of warning, I would say.
They are going to be a tricky little opponent to overcome, particularly in those opening few minutes as well, to just try and manage the game, keep our heads about us and go from there. The Conor O'Shea and McKinley factor, we'll go with O'Shea first of all. It was an interesting image or interview he did with Paul Kimmage last Sunday where he spoke about the Ireland job and how he would never take it because it can only ever end badly. Does that show a lack of personal ambition on his point, or can you see where he's coming from in that he just, you know, you're better off to steer clear? Because the natural thought was Conor O'Shea someday going to be Ireland coach.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule out Conor ever being the Ireland coach.
He said never, and it's in print, Rory.
Yeah, I know. To be honest, I could see him taking over from David Nusafora above the coaching job, probably more than I could see the coach. But I mean, he's definitely going to be, everyone can change their mind, you know. Look, he knows Irish rugby more than any of the opposition coaches, maybe other than Gatland. You know, he knows Irish rugby and how we tick very well. But he's working with very limited materials with Italy. And with the six-day turnaround, the day's travel, I find it very hard to believe that they're going to cause... Like, in Rome last year, they were just so far off Ireland's pace. And Ireland were coming off the back of a disappointing opening performance that day as well. There's a similar, for all that there's the warm glow of Johnny Sexton's drop goal, there's a similar feeling around camp of being disappointed with the performance and wanting to put some things right. There's a few new faces wanting to impress. So, look, the Italians can hurt Ireland, and they can hurt Ireland in a way that other teams have hurt Ireland in the past. So it's a good test of Andy Farrell's line speed and teams who can get around them, because often when teams go wide and have the capacity to win collisions in tight, Ireland can get hurt. So it's a good test for Ireland. But at the same time, you would fully expect them to kind of overcome that test early on, play at a pace that Italy can't live with, particularly with the turnaround, and pull away nicely towards the second half. Mm-hmm. I mean, a bonus point is a minimum requirement. England and Wales both got them last weekend. We've got to look at the bigger picture here. You know, if Ireland are not going to win a Grand Slam, they need to put themselves in a position to at least be able to win the tournament on the final day. And this is where you pick up your... This is where you earn your money, really, when it comes to that. So, look, Conor O'Shea's doing... making progress with Italy, but they're far off the pace. And if Ireland play to their best, I don't... You know, they can cause a few problems, but I don't see them causing overall trouble.
I'd imagine you'd echo that as well, Liam.
I would. I think if I was to summarise it, I would say slightly freshened up team. I'd stick with the same second rows, change another few things, really work on what we're going to do with that lineup ball. But ultimately, if we can keep the recycle of our ball down to below 5 seconds, 3 to 4 seconds of a recycle, I think Italian midfield won't be able to cope with rearranging themselves defensively. I think that huge opportunities will come from that. And if you have something like Larmour coming on, he'll put the fear of God, to quote the great Paul O'Connell, into those blue shirts, because he has that ability to scare front five players, and that would be a wonderful thing to see.
I tell you, Liam, that stats book is stood to you. Liam and Rory, thanks a million for that. We'll have the starting 15, of course, tomorrow lunchtime, and we'll go through with Brian O'Driscoll on Friday evening show. But up next, we're talking to Colm Kavanagh.
Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.